Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome everyone to the On Poly Podcast. I'm Steve Paikin.
And I'm John Michael McGrath.
We're on every weekday during this 43rd Ontario election campaign. Today on the pod, we'll catch you up on all the happenings during the Victoria Day weekend, the shocking storms that killed 10 Ontarians, how much politics did the parties play with that tragedy, and COVID continues to bedevil two of the party leaders. It's Tuesday, May 24th, 2022, day 21 of the campaign, so let's get to it. JMM, I hope you had a good holiday weekend and didn't aim any fireworks at police officers. Oh my goodness, how bloody crazy is that? What the hell were they thinking? I know they weren't thinking. They weren't. Anyway, on to the hustings. The big story over the weekend was the freak storm that blasted through parts of the province. 10 people died. It was particularly vicious in eastern Ontario and in parts of York Region. The Liberal leader, Stephen Del Duca, immediately cancelled his plans to visit Niagara Region and went to eastern Ontario instead.
Electricity was down through much of Ottawa, you know, lots of people in distress, and Del Duca, you know, charging like, where's the premier? He did an event with Amanda Simard, who is the candidate in Glengarry Prescott Russell. People will remember her. She was elected as a Progressive Conservative member 4 years ago, left the PC caucus over the government's early policies regarding Francophone affairs. Later on, moved into the Liberal caucus and is now seeking re-election as a Liberal.
Now, let me say a word about this event, because I did watch the event on the Zoom feed, and it was a strong event for Del Duca. He's been looking for an opportunity in order to pummel the premier on something, and this was certainly tailor-made. Where's the premier? With one exception. And that is, he said he was suspending his campaign in order to visit and attend to the people of Eastern Ontario. And that is all well and good. But I thought the use of the word suspending there was a bit precious. I mean, come on. We're, a week and change to go in an election campaign. He was campaigning. He did a press conference in the area. He took questions from media. He criticized the premier. I mean, he really wasn't suspending his campaign. He was campaigning.
Right. Precious is a good word. It was clearly, too cute by half. He was not suspending his campaign. Having said that, he did, I think, demonstrate that, you know, he and the Liberal Party campaign, they could pivot when necessary, change their schedule, be where they needed to be to, shine a spotlight on needs in, you know, what was an actual urgent situation in which, you know, sometimes just bringing the TV cameras around to an event like this can help things. I'm not sure that, you know, it's not like Del Duca was, you know, patching up any holes in people's roofs or mending any windows. But a useful indicator of the skill of the campaign.
Absolutely. And he did speak to some local people on the ground, small businesses, to find out what they needed and so on and so forth. And in politics, most of the time you get marks for showing up. We should say Doug Ford, on day one that this happened, did not do any events. But on day two, he tried to also convey the image of someone not playing politics with a disaster. He showed up in York Region to survey some of the damage.
And, you know, it is always tough for leaders to know what to do here. If you show up, as Del Duca did, and as Ford later did, you know, you will get knocked for politicizing a disaster. If you don't show up, you look like you are either exploiting or ignoring the situation, depending on the day of the week. You know, when Jean Chrétien was prime minister, there were some really severe floods in Manitoba. And Jean Chrétien being prime minister, he showed up for a photo op. I believe he was recorded putting sandbags into place to help, stem the floods, and got excoriated for doing the photo op and then leaving town. You know, he was there to convey the impression that he was there to help. But, they did not need the prime minister to personally fill sandbags, including his, of course, enormous entourage and, you know, press following and attenders and all of that. It just wasn't a terribly helpful addition.
Well, as strange as this sounds, I remember another example that was so eerily similar to the one that people experienced just this past weekend. It's 1985. It's just after the May 2nd election. Premier Frank Miller of the Tories and Dennis Timbrell, one of his senior cabinet ministers, go to the communities in and around Barrie, Ontario, where a tornado had touched down and they killed, I think a dozen people died in that incident, John Michael. And again, here's the premier and a senior minister surveying the damage. There are cameras around to record it. That is part of the job. But at this point, of course, Miller had only won a minority government, and the Liberals and New Democrats were on the verge of joining forces to kick him out. So was he politicizing the tornado to show the public, look at us, we're doing our jobs, please don't throw us out? Well, yeah, a little bit. He sure was. So it's hard to know where to draw the line on these things, that's for sure. Now, let's check in on what else the leaders were up to this weekend, starting with the NDP. They did two events focusing on nursing shortages.
So Andrew Horvath was doing two virtual events on the weekend, one in Niagara Region, one in Scarborough. These were themed about filling empty nursing jobs in those regions by hiring new nurses. Dave Augustine, the New Democrat candidate for Niagara West, introduced Horvath at the Niagara event. He was the mayor of Pelham and a Niagara regional councillor for 12 years. Horvath, that we all know, contracted COVID-19 last week, but, you know, was looking good, sounded, recovering. Horvath's campaign actually announced that she will be returning to in-person appearances on Wednesday. There were other nurses who attended the event, but it was still an interesting choice of riding to focus on. The riding of Niagara West before the House was dissolved was represented by Sam Osterhoff. He won that seat with 53% of the vote in 2018. So not exactly clear to me why the NDP would focus on this riding, given that it will be a very hard riding for them to win, even if things go really well for them on June 2nd.
Right. Let me say a word as well about Andrea Horvath, because, you know, I got to tell you, she was a real trooper to try to get through with this announcement. She looked good. She sounded upbeat. But, you know, she's fighting COVID and she was feeling lousy the whole time. And you and I've talked in the past, John Michael, about the difficulties of virtually campaigning versus actually being there. And the virtual campaigns, you know, they just don't match up. I mean, there were moments during this campaign announcement when the sound and the video didn't sync up, so that looked a little bizarre. And then Dave Augustine, God bless him, but for whatever reason, they had him standing right in front of Horvath when he was introducing her, and she was talking and she was doing her thing. So you couldn't see her. She was obscured. Probably 80% of her was obscured because Augustine was standing right in front of her, and I guess nobody told him, can you just move a half a step to your left so that we can see the leader? You may think I'm being picky about this. I'm really not. I've been on TV for a little bit, and I can tell you that when your tie is crooked or when your hair isn't properly combed or when your papers are messy on the desk, people notice, and they're distracted by that, and it takes away from your presentation and your message. And people can't concentrate on what you're trying to say when they are so distracted by things like your candidate standing in front of your leader so you can't see the leader. Now, Horvath did perform well, particularly when you consider that she's fighting COVID, but she did, late in the announcement, have a coughing fit that she just could not stop. And here's what some of that sounded like.
And I'm saying to nurses and to Ontarians, we can fix it. We will fix it. Pardon me.
Now, shortly after that, the NDP just simply pulled the plug on the whole Zoom feed. Usually they send it back to Ms. Horvath at the end to give her a chance to wrap things up, but she clearly couldn't do it. She was just coughing so much, and you did have to have a lot of sympathy for her, but the damn COVID just got to her. Now, here's the crazy thing. I just got finished talking to Erin Kelly from Advanced Symbolics, and she said that after that event, Horvath's numbers went up. Her seat count went up. And what it means is there may actually be a bit of a sympathy vote for her out there who see her making an effort to campaign in spite of the fact that she's dealing with all this COVID. So now we're 9 days to go, and who knows if that's going to hold up. But anyway, I did find that interesting that her numbers actually went up despite the fact that she was off the campaign trail. Now, the NDP also made another announcement about democratic reform. Why don't you tell us about that one?
The NDP are proposing to implement a mixed member proportional system, the kind that was recommended by a constituency assembly about 15 years ago. We held a referendum about this in Ontario in 2007, and it did not pass, as you might realize, that we still have the same electoral system that we had at Confederation. Andrea Horvath made the point that she thinks that the Liberals, Stephen Del Duca, has proposed to implement a ranked ballot system. Horvath accused the Liberals of basically choosing the system that would most benefit them. The NDP would opt for proportional representation, which is what sort of mixed member proportional is, because the party has long favored proportional representation and believes it's a fairer way to allocate representatives.
Well, I do remember covering that 2007 Constituent Assembly thing, and yes, they did recommend mixed member proportional, and yes, it can be a better and fairer system than first past the post, but it has one massive disadvantage, and that is no one knows what the hell it is. MMP yeah. is really confusing, and it's difficult to explain, which is why, of course, I'm going to ask you, you nerd, to explain it, because even though I probably could, I probably can't do it as well as you, so you go for it.
Right. I mean, this is the problem that a lot of electoral reform programs have, is that sometimes the acronyms are really off-putting. I think Andrew Coyne once described single transferable vote, or STV, sounding like a sexually transmitted disease. So in 2007, the then Liberal government of Dalton McGuinty, they had committed in their 2003 platform to bring in a citizens' assembly to analyze electoral reform. That assembly proposed mixed member proportional as a way of changing the system we have now. In an MMP system, you still have locally elected members in ridings the way we do now, but then the legislature would also have basically like about a third of its members would be what you would call top-up members, or anywhere between like a quarter to a third. And those top-up members would be allocated to the smaller parties who are usually disadvantaged in our first-past-the-post system, to better reflect their proportional standing. So, you know, if you had a system in which the Liberals got, let's say, 40% of the vote, but 60% of the seats, smaller parties who had been disadvantaged would get some additional seats to make up for that deficit. You know, as I mentioned, the NDP have historically supported proportional representation, and this kind of system has the benefit of keeping some link between local representation and the people who represent us at Queen's Park. There are other proportional representation systems where you just go off of a national or, in this case, you would do like a provincial list and just allocate them with no regard to local representation. The Liberals, as we mentioned, support ranked balloting instead. It's not really a proportional system at all, but it has the benefit of ensuring that in any riding, the winner would be able to say that they won with 50% plus one of the votes. So, you know, it's not just a choice of like the technical finicky details of electoral reform. It's also a choice about, you know, what values you think should be prioritized in the voting system. And of course, yes, these systems do tend to benefit different types of political parties.
You see, folks, that's why I asked him to explain it, because he did a way better job than I ever could have. So well done. Now, let's continue our look at what took place this past weekend. The Liberals did an announcement about carjacking, and you know, of course, why that was in the news so much lately. Mitchell Marner, the terrific player for the Toronto Maple Leafs, had his car carjacked at gunpoint while he was going out to a movie one night in the West End. So obviously, this has been very top of mind for a lot of people ever since then. And the opportunity, of course, to bash the PCs for being, quote unquote, too cozy with the gun lobby was something Stephen Del Duca just could not resist.
Yes. And this is, of course, the second time the Liberal campaign has tried to, let's say, pluck something out of the headlines and spin a campaign announcement out of it. The first was the ban on handguns that they proposed. You know, that policy got I would say, a very skeptical treatment from reporters, primarily because the real power to do anything about handguns does not have anything to do with the provincial government at all. This is the federal criminal power at work. Federal government has proposed some handgun policies that interact a bit with municipalities, but nobody here in any party really is proposing to dramatically use provincial powers because they can't.
Let's take a look at what the PC leader Doug Ford did over the weekend. He visited, interestingly enough, Parry Sound, Muskoka on Sunday. Didn't make an announcement, no clips from the event, no media availability, and a very interesting choice of riding to attend, John Michael.
Right. We talked about Parry Sound, Muskoka last week. One of the safe seats for the progressive conservatives in normal times. but it could mean that this is, in fact, not so safe this time around. You know, why would the PC leader be going there unless the Greens were nipping at his heels? There is no Liberal candidate on the ballot. The NDP did reasonably well in the last election, but I don't think anybody actually expects them to win the riding. So maybe Ford is worried about holding on to that seat for his party, or maybe he's doing a little bit of trolling and spending a bit of time in a safe seat, flying the PC party flag in one of its safe seats.
Well, let's admit, Parry Sound, Muskoka is a pretty beautiful place to spend some time on a holiday weekend, so there is that.
And his cottage is there.
And his cottage is there. So now you were just up there as well. Does Matt Richter, the Green candidate, have much of a ground game there?
You know, Richter's team claimed that they had knocked on, I believe, 30,000 doors in the riding, which is actually a pretty substantial chunk of the 80,000 voters on the rolls there. I mean, some of the volunteers with his campaign were joking about running out of doors to knock on, which, you know, is one of those good problems to have if you're running a campaign. The day I followed them around was a little bit chaotic, and I didn't actually see that many people answer their doors. We were also door knocking around dinner time, so maybe some people just didn't want to answer the door. But I will say, it's not my first time tailing a canvas. And the one thing I didn't see, and you do see this, or at least I have seen it, particularly in Toronto, and given the last, 15, 20 years or so, I saw it primarily when I was tailing Liberal campaigns. You do sometimes see a really nasty, angry response to people knocking on doors. Not often, but I don't think you knock on that many doors without seeing it at least once. And I didn't see that at all in terms of Matt Richter's campaign. Now, as I said, a lot of people just didn't answer their doors at all. But I was surprised that, in general, the response was very positive. Even, people who said nothing about whether they were going to vote for him, at least he wasn't getting obscenities shouted at him.
Now, one of the issues that the opposition parties have tried to make a bigger issue in this campaign is the issue of Tory candidates showing up.
When candidates debate local issues, it engages people in politics. It becomes real. It drives engagement in the process. By dodging these debates, Doug Ford, Doug Downey, and the other conservatives are taking for granted the trust that people put in our institutions, in democracy. The most basic test of leadership is showing up, being accountable, listening to the public, answering questions, and even uncomfortable ones.
That's Jeff Lehman. He is the mayor of Barrie. He is running for the Liberals in the Barrie-Springwater-Oro-Medonte riding against the Attorney General Doug Downey. And apparently, they've had three all-candidates debates in the riding. Downey has shown up to one of them. Skip two. And this has been an issue for the opposition parties, either the PC leader or his candidates, not doing all candidates debates, not showing up for interviews on television, not participating in all candidate discussions. Lehman put out a challenge basically to the conservatives. Come on, we have debates, show up.
This has been really an issue for the entire province. Progressive conservative candidates just really not showing up for these types of events. They have not sometimes shown up on TV for interviews. PC leader Doug Ford has not appeared on the agenda. You wrote something for our website about how he's the first premier in our history to not show up. You know, you have a column actually today, Steve, focusing on the race in University Rosedale. You went door to door with the New Democrats, the Liberals, and the Green candidate. The Tory candidate initially asked you to come along, and then I believe when you tried to nail down details, he emailed back saying, sorry, too busy.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Obviously, head office got to him and told him, you're a 20-something rookie candidate and you will not be hanging out with reporters. I'm very sorry. Jeff Lehman, back to Barry for a moment. Lehman says people in the riding are showing up to attend these debates, to learn more about the candidates and their platforms. There's also an audience on television because many of these debates are televised by a local cable company, for example. But the PCs are running a classic frontrunners campaign where they try to keep their heads down and participate as little as possible in the democratic process. And, you know, if you want to be cynical about these things, given that they've been leading in the polls for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, you know, you'd have to say that this strategy so far is paying off for them.
Right. And in fairness to the progressive conservatives, Doug Ford is still doing, if not daily events, certainly frequent events. That we haven't had a big long gap like we had earlier in the campaign where there was just radio silence from the campaign for a few days there. He does take questions, although it is still our not preferred format of just one question, just one follow-up. And I can't help but add, I mean, if the Liberals actually thought that that this was going to benefit the Tories to actually show up to these debates, they would not be begging them to show up, right? This is, I think, one of those cases where, you know, there's a principle here, and I respect the principle, and as a reporter, I want people to show up and defend their views. But again, to be slightly cynical, I don't think that this is going to make or break the campaign for the Tories.
Although, again, having just spoken with Erin Kelly, she says there is considerable angst on social media about this. And yes, most of it is among those people who would never vote for Ford anyway. But she did say there is a chunk of the undecided who are not pleased about the fact that Tory candidates are not showing up. And that is showing up in social media feeds. And Erin went so far as to say it is a bit of an issue today and could continue to be a bigger issue if the Tories don't do something about this. Having said that, you know, go back in time, even past elections where the party in power had a strong lead during the writ period, their leaders still did one-on-one interviews. Their candidates still allowed reporters to tag along on canvases to see what issues came up at the door, whether it was Liberals in power, Tories in power, New Democrats in power. This is the way things have always been done, but not this time. Okay, we'll get off that soapbox now and do another quick word on Stephen Del Duca, who did 5 events in Northern Ontario over the weekend in hopes of picking up some seats there.
He did a photo op in Sudbury, of course, did the obligatory visit to the Big Nickel, but also spoke about the opioid crisis in northeastern Ontario. And then he went to Thunder Bay. He met with Indigenous leaders there and talked about Liberal support for small businesses. I should add that this is very similar in some ways to the tour that Andrea Horvath was hoping to do last week before COVID-19 got in her way. So, you know, you can see that other parties are treating the North as, you know, a place where there's some real competition possible.
Let's spare a word for the Greens here. Mike Schreiner announcing that the Green Party will work with urban municipalities so that people have access to nature, parks, or trails within a 10-minute walk from their home by the year 2030.
The Green Party is also touting the endorsement from David Suzuki for Schreiner himself, for Diane Sachs, and for Matt Richter, the aforementioned candidate in Parry Sound Muskoka. Richter and Schreiner were both endorsed by the OSSTF last week, and Schreiner has also been endorsed by local EDFO representatives. OSSTF and EDFO are both major education unions in Ontario. Sachs has received endorsements from numerous prominent voices across the political spectrum, including former Conservative politician Hugh Siegel, former Toronto Mayor Barbara Hall, Liberal Tom Axworthy, and a 3-time New Democrat candidate Julian Heller.
A fairly ecumenical series of endorsements there. Now, let's move on to today and check in on where the leaders were at.
This election is our shot. It's our shot to finally fix seniors' care in Ontario.
There's Andrea Horvath campaigning still virtually, discussing long-term care. For what it's worth, Horvath says she is now testing negative, feeling much better, but she had sniffles today, decided to do one last day in isolation, but she'll be back out on the hustings tomorrow. She announced the NDP would scrap a law passed by the PCs that critics say makes it more difficult for people to sue long-term care homes. The bill provides liability protection who make a, quote, honest effort to follow public health guidelines and the laws. The New Democrat leader was joined by family members who lost loved ones at Orchard Villa. And JMM, you should remind people what Orchard Villa was all about.
Orchard Villa was the long-term care home that had some of the worst COVID-19 outbreaks in the province. 70 people died in the 230-bed home during the first wave of COVID-19 back in early 2020. The home was the subject of the really shocking report from the Canadian Forces that was eventually made public and, probably led directly to the establishment of the government's independent inquiry into long-term care. That report, really documented some awful, awful conditions. People who suffered not just directly from COVID-19, but from neglect, as reported in things like cockroaches and flies, the smell of rotten food in the hallways, residents suffering from dehydration, really, nightmare fuel stuff.
The PC leader, Doug Ford, was in Brampton today at a plant building the Mississauga LRT.
And I want to thank the team here at Alstom's. Well, these are all-stars right behind me. At the state-of-the-art facility for hosting us today.
Ford mentioning that he wanted to spend $86.6 billion over the next 10 years to build and expand roads, highways, and public transit across Ontario. And of course, there was the obligatory backdrop of lots of men in hard hats looking like they were just champing at the bit to get out there and build something.
You know, we've talked about this repeatedly in the podcast, so we're going to repeat it just a little bit more. But, it really is one of the themes of the campaign. The Tories really proposing a truly enormous amount of money on construction. The Liberals, basically, with the exception of the 413 highway, have co-signed essentially the whole bill of sale. While the PC party is trying to make this about who's for building more and who wants to oppose building. Repeat myself here a little bit. I mean, the Liberals really have said that they intend to fund all of the same transit projects, right? I don't think there's as violent a disagreement here as the PCs want to say there is. Some of the more interesting disagreement is over things like how you get this stuff built between environmental approvals and those kinds of things. So very much one of the key issues of the campaign.
The PC leader was asked today about the storm that you and I talked about earlier, John Michael. He was specifically asked about climate change and his party's plans to invest more in climate-resilient infrastructure and whether they should be doing more. Here's part of his response.
You have to build roads and highways to get people out of the gridlock. One of the worst examples of pollution, go stand on the bridge of the 401 and watch bumper-to-bumper traffic. That's why we're building roads and bridges and highways to get people home quicker, that they don't have to sit in gridlock and smell someone else's fumes.
I guess the explanation that building more highways gets cars moving more quickly and is thus less polluting, it will not, I think, surprise our listeners to say that that's not, strictly speaking, accurate. When cars move more quickly, they consume more gasoline and will pollute more than, an idling car is not an effective use of gasoline, but a car moving at 120 kilometers an hour on a highway is actually polluting more. That said, The question was about, climate resiliency. And this is one of those topics that really, we ought to be talking about a lot more because the government owns a lot of stuff. And, whether that's hospitals or roads or schools, and all of that stuff gets battered by big storms like the one we had in the weekend. And, whether that stuff is being built to survive what we once thought of as 1 in 100 year storms, and now it's more like 1 every 10 year storms, that's a big question. And I, talk to the insurance people sometime. I know we've had them on the agenda agenda. Maybe we'll have them on the podcast at some point. But like, insurers in Canada are always like ringing the alarm about how we are not taking climate resiliency seriously enough.
The average cost of a home in Ontario under Doug Ford has climbed by $500,000.
Let's move to the capital city, where Stephen Del Duca, the Liberal leader, was campaigning today. And John Michael, I did read your column on the fact that you think time is running out for him to make his mark. Why don't you go into that?
Right. So the Liberal leader was in my own riding of Beaches East York to talk about the Liberal proposal to implement a use it or lose it tax for, you know, what he alleges are land hoarders. But you know, we're looking at the calendar and there's like 9 days left to the election. And so I and another reporter asked him, you know, what happens if he doesn't win on June 2nd? Because there's a whole universe of possibilities right now. But, you know, if he doesn't form government, whether that's as a leader of a minority coalition or whatever, I mean, that's maybe one possibility. But there's also some really bad possibilities for the Liberals at the moment. And depending on which website you look at, they might still be the third party in the legislature when the dust settles on June 2nd. So, you know, I had to ask Del Duca, like, if you don't form at least the official opposition, if you don't carry your seat, I mean, are you still going to be the Liberal leader for much longer? You'll be shocked to discover that Stephen Del Duca did not suddenly announce that he was going to resign if he didn't win the election.
I am not shocked to hear that. And do you want to know how he's doing in that riding right now?
I would very much like to know.
Well, again, having just talked to Aaron Kelly from Advanced Symbolics, Inc. Oh, first of all, do you want to hear about your riding or do you want to hear about his riding first?
Oh, I mean, I'm selfish. Tell me about Beaches East York first.
Okay, Beaches East York is one of the closest NDP Liberal fights in the whole province. At the moment, the NDP candidate leads the Liberal candidate by 0.2%.
Wow.
That according to Advanced Symbolics. That's Beaches East York, which was NDP in the previous house, but it's always close. I remember when Kathleen Wynne won her majority government in 2014, Arthur Potts took that seat for the Liberals, but only by 400 votes. So it's always close. Or I should say, lately it's been close. Let's go up to Vaughan Woodbridge, which is the seat that Stephen Del Duca is seeking. And at the moment, Polly, which is the artificial intelligence that does the polling for Advanced Symbolics, they have Del Duca up by 2.2% over Michael Tobolo, who is the Conservative cabinet minister and the former sitting member in the last house. So we're looking at two really close races in the province that could go either way at this point. This may be a good time to remind everybody about something called the Quadra Factor. Does that ring any bells, John Michael?
It does not.
This is one of these very rare times when being an old fart helps over you young kids. Okay, the Quadra Factor goes back to 1984. And that was the year that John Turner led the Federal Liberal Party to its worst finish ever. Only 40 seats. And despite that, John Turner managed to be the only Liberal elected west of Manitoba. And the only one in British Columbia. He was running in Vancouver Quadra. And he won the seat because I think people in Vancouver sort of wanted to say, you know, we're going to punish the Liberals across the rest of the party, across the rest of the country. But for you, we appreciate the effort you've made as a guy who decided to run in Western Canada and who wanted to try to plant the Liberal flag in Vancouver. So we're going to let you win that seat. And, you know, the Quadra Factor is where one guy seems to, for whatever reason, fly in the face of a trend that's happening everywhere else. At the moment, the Progressive Conservatives are looking pretty good all across the 905 and in York region. And yet, Del Duca's up by 2.2 points in Vaughan Woodbridge. So there may be some Quadra Factor happening there. And maybe they remember him as their former sitting member back before Tobolo won. So anyway, that's your little story. And now everybody knows what the Quadra Factor is.
We need new solutions to old problems. And that's exactly what the Ontario Greens are putting forward.
Well, there's Mike Schreiner, and let's do another word with the Green Party leader who was talking about housing today, still campaigning virtually because of testing positive for COVID, of course, discussing housing with a new idea. We've all heard of NIMBY, as in not in my backyard. This one's YIMBY. Tell us what that's about.
You know, I'm always happy when the language and terminology of housing policy dorks makes its way into wider circulation. And, you know, this has been a word that has been out there more and more lately, but I feel like you would be a totally normal, well-balanced human if you didn't know what YIMBY means. And so this is the idea of, you know, saying yes in my backyard, you know, fighting the, let's call it, political forces of opposition to new housing by, you know, advocating for new forms of building and just new housing in general. Specifically, the Greens are advocating for a change in provincial policy. We've talked about some of this stuff before. They want to, you know, expand zoning to allow fourplexes, triplexes, duplexes, townhouses in all residential neighborhoods in the province. They want to sort of preemptively allow mid-rise developments along transit corridors, launch what they call a, you know, a province-wide Yes in My Backyard initiative. You know, I find it interesting that they are really like adopting that YIMBY label, because like I said, I mean, I do think housing dorks are having a bit of a moment, and it's interesting to see, you know, a substantial provincial political party adopt that language. You know, it's almost, you know, well, I guess at the beginning of the campaign, Stephen Del Duca did also wish us all a happy May the 4th for Star Wars Day. So it sort of rings the same bell in my head in the same way.
Now, can I confirm you are a housing dork?
Yes, very much.
Okay, just wanted to get that on the record. Two quick things before we leave, and that is, someone by the name of Greg Samuel tweeted earlier, "Thanks very much for the podcast on Ontario elections. You've been there for us year in and year out." We love hearing that. And I just wanted to confirm that Greg Samuel is not related to you, John Michael. He's not related to me.
No, I don't believe this person is any kind of a sibling or cousin or aunt or uncle.
Fantastic. So we can take him at his word there. And last thing before we go, if you were not aware, TVO has a new show called The Thread, hosted by our pal Nam Kiwanuka. They're hosting a live Zoom event tomorrow, 3:45 p.m. Eastern Time, on the topic of what keeps people from the polls on election day. And if you'd like to join that, you can find more information on their Instagram account. It is at TVO The Thread. Once again, on Instagram, at TVO The Thread, 3:45 p.m. tomorrow. And that is the On Poly podcast for day 21. A reminder, we're here every weekday during this 43rd general election campaign, right through to election day, June the 2nd. JMM, we'll see you on the hustings.
See you tomorrow, Steve.